Hi, and welcome to the Rare Business Podcast. My name is Adrian Swinsko, and I'm a consultant, advisor, researcher, and writer on all things related to customer service and customer experience. Through this podcast, I seek out and interview CEOs, entrepreneurs, business and tech leaders, and leading thinkers about what it takes to build organizations that produce better outcomes for both customers and employees in this fast-moving modern age that we live in. If this is your first time listening to one of these interviews, then welcome. And please do dive into the archives at adrianswinsko.com, as I've now completed over 250 of these interviews in the last few years. If this is not your first time listening, then thank you for returning, and I'll aim to do a good enough job to keep you coming back week after week. Anyway, that's enough from me right now. Let's get into the interview. So, welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Annette Franz, who is, not only is she an internationally recognized customer experience thought leader, expert, coach, consultant, now an author, she's also a friend of mine and a fellow blogger that I met through the blogosphere, as it were, Crumbs, probably over 10 years ago, I think now. But so, hello, Annette, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, and thank you for having me. I really appreciate being on today.
Perfect.
And it's great to catch up with you again. We last saw each other back in April, I suppose it was.
Yeah, so. Indeed. Actually, funnily enough, they're actually the first time face-to-face.
First time, yes.
Ever.
Yes.
Which is crazy. But anyway, but rather than this being a bit of a friend catch-up, and I should ask you to tell us a bit about yourself and the work you do, because there are going to be other people that are going to read the highlights and or listen in to the podcast. So please introduce yourself.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that great introduction too, because those are all big words that I appreciate, obviously. But I've been I'm a CEO and founder of CX Journey Inc. I've been in this customer experience space for a little over 25 years. Started at JD Power and Associates back in the early 90s before it was even called customer experience. So it's been a lot of fun to watch the evolution of this thing called CX, right? I've started my own business about 3 years ago and haven't looked back since. So yeah, it's been a fun ride so far.
Cool. Now, I have been rattling on at you for a while now, I believe, about writing a book, and you've done it.
Yes.
Finally.
I know.
Thank goodness, and congratulations, and well done. And it's called Customer Understanding, 3 Ways to Put the Customer in Customer Experience and at the Heart of Your Business. So tell me about the book. Tell me about why now, how it came about, how you've made time for it now, and what its overall sort of central thesis before we get stuck into some of the detail.
All right. Sounds good. That's a lot to cover there, but I'll do that. I started to think about the book probably 5 years ago, maybe even a little bit longer than 5 years ago, when folks like you kept saying, yeah, hey, you ought to put some of that content together and make a book out of it. Yeah. And my thinking on that was, oh yeah, that's just what the world needs, another CX book, right? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because at the time I had connected with Bernadette Jiwa at the time she was in Perth, but she's in Melbourne. Do you know Bernadette?
Bernadette rocks.
Yes, she is awesome. And the reason that I specifically mentioned Bernadette too is that she wrote the foreword for the book. So I was really excited about that. Nice. Really honored to have her do that. Yeah. But in the course of our conversations about the book, I had asked her that same thing. I said, why does the world need another CX book? And she said, you know what? It's your book. It's your thoughts, your thinking, your view on this, and it needs to get out there. And so I really appreciated that. Took that to heart, took everybody's support to heart. And, I had a few fits and starts with the book. And then finally last fall, as I was doing a keynote that was very closely related to the book and what it ended up being, I said, aha, this is it. I've got it now. Mm. And on the flight back home from that event, I took all my notes out of my presentation and put them in a Word doc. It didn't end up being the actual book at that, but it gave me sort of just gave me the inspiration or the motivation to just get started. And so I sat down last fall and started writing it. And, you know, it was like 9 months. I don't know if that's good or bad, but it took me about 9 months and sent it off to the editor in July. And here we are, just launched it a couple of weeks ago. So yeah, it was a fun process. And to answer your question about, you know, sort of what the central thesis is of the book, it's not a book about journey mapping per se. You know, I know that's what a lot of people think when they hear my name, is that the content is probably all about journey mapping, but the book is really about putting the customer into the customer experience and developing a customer centric culture. Mm-hmm. And how to do that, using those three ways to bring the customer's voice in, because that's what customer centric culture is all about, right? It's about putting the customer at the heart of everything you do, and not doing, I always like to say, you know, no decisions, no design without first asking, you know, how is it going to impact the customer? How will it make her feel? How will it help her solve a problem, you know, kind of thing. So, mm-hmm. So I spent some time, you know, building the business case for why you need to do this. And then I go into the three ways. And then the last part of the book is I do delve into journey mapping and I tell you how to do it, right? I outline how to do a current state workshop, how to do a service blueprint workshop, and how to do a future state mapping workshop. Mm-hmm. So definitely get into that. But really, the way that I want people to think about it is not just about the specific tactics, but about shifting the business to have a more customer-centric culture, to have a customer-centric culture.
Perfect. I agree with that. I mean, I've got a copy of the book and I've seen it, and there is very much a hardcore how-to bit in there about kind of customer journey mapping, but it's a bit like there's no point doing that if you don't know what you're doing and why you're doing it. And that's right. What the initial part of the book is about. But
exactly.
What I wanted to do was if it's okay with you, I wanted to dig into a few areas of the book that stood out for me, just to give people a flavor of it. Now, we don't want to tell everybody everything, obviously.
This is just you and me anyway.
Yeah, so obviously. Nobody else listens to this at all. Kind of. But the first thing I wanted to ask you was that, you talked about putting the customer at the heart of what companies do. My question was that, I mean, do companies really put customers at the core of all they do? I mean, are they really customer-centric? Because, I just published a piece on my Forbes column which reflected on something that Andy McMillan of User Testing told me a few months ago. Mm. Where their reflections were that over the last couple of years, people have talked about being customer-centric, but actually only now are they really starting to really figure out and think about the overall customer experience, because actually the conversation has been dominated by technology this and digital that over the last few years, and it's only now that they're emerging and starting to talk holistically. I mean, would you agree with that?
I would absolutely agree with that. I think that there's a lot of talk about it, and you actually, that's a good point you bring up about technology and digital and all that, right? It's like they throw technology at a people problem, and customer experience and customer centricity is a, you know, quote unquote people problem, right? Mm-hmm. It's a people thing. It's all about emotions, feelings, perceptions about the brand and about the experience and everything. And that's not technology, right? And so they talk a lot about it, but they don't actually do it. You know, I think Amazon is probably the poster child for companies that talk about customer obsession and mm-hmm. do customer obsession, right? I think they're a great poster child for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so the next thing I wanted to ask you about, because you mentioned it and I thought, well, this is brilliant. That's, I'm like going, there's a workshop talk in of itself.
Okay.
You know, like the deadly sins of customer experience. I was like going, yes. Brilliant. So tell me, what are they? Or I know there's quite a long list, and perhaps kind of like not all of them. Tell me what the really big ones are.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I wrote about the seven deadly sins years ago. I think it was probably maybe 2014 or 2015 when I first wrote about that. And I've obviously evolved since then to add a few more things to it. But I like the story of the seven deadly sins, right? Because the seven deadly sins are, they're the mortal sins. They're sort of the root of all evil or the root of all sins. And if you get these wrong, everything else is going to fail from there. So sure. I would say that. So probably the biggest ones are no executive commitment.
Right.
That's probably first and foremost, no executive commitment. And maybe not necessarily in this order, but I think they're actually the three that I'm going to mention that I think are the biggest ones are interwoven, right? They're okay. tied together. So executive commitment, mm-hmm. Inside out thinking. Inside out thinking is about, you know, not being customer centric. It's about not incorporating outside in thinking. It's about running your business because in the way that you think is best for the customer, is best mm-hmm. for the business, you know, that kind of thing. And then the third one is employee experience, and not putting employees more first, because even though we talk about customer-centric culture, I believe you can't have a customer-centric culture without putting your employees first. So
yeah.
I think that's really important.
And so thank you for that. I mean, my hypothesis is, with many of those, is that understanding plays a huge role in helping remove these things. Because actually, I always think sometimes that many of the things that get in the way of us, you know, improving things, a lot of the time it can come down to just pure ignorance that we just don't right. know, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And is that where you think kind of that things like journey mapping and empathy mapping and all these different things, these different techniques, I mean, is that where it plays a really, really big role? It's not just about the map. It's about education in many ways.
Exactly. Yeah. So just real quick, the three ways are listening, characterizing, and empathizing, where listening is surveys and feedback and data. Characterizing is about personas and journey mapping, obviously, or empathy. Empathizing is about walking in your customer's shoes. And all three of those together really give you a good picture of who your customers are, what their experience is today, what are their needs, what are their pain points, what problems are they trying to solve, and helping us to understand. Because if we don't, I always like to say you can't transform something you don't understand. So if we don't know what we're dealing with today or what we're working with today, how can we improve it for tomorrow? And we need to. Customers are telling us we need to. So we've got to take the time to really understand who they are and what they're trying to do as they interact with the brand. So yeah, absolutely. You know, journey mapping is an important tool and an important process to help us do that.
But then... You know, it's not as if like journey mapping is new, and there's a lot of people are talking about it and a lot of people doing it and so on and so forth. But from your perspective, as somebody who you know, you've led the way in a lot of this stuff, how do you think that many people are getting on with their journey mapping? And, you know, what are they getting wrong? What are they getting right? That sort of stuff. What, I mean, almost give us a state of the union.
State of journey mapping. State of journey mapping.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that. That's awesome. Well, it's not going great. Let's put it that way. You know, people are doing it, or they think they're doing it, but they're not really doing it right.
Okay.
It's a funny thing when I'm presenting on journey mapping, I'll ask the question at the beginning of the event, you know, how many of you are journey mapping, and all the hands go up, right?
Yeah.
And then I go through what it is, right? Go through the whole process and everything, and then I ask people who's journey mapping, and like, you know, two hands go up or something.
Right.
So no, because I don't think they know what it is and how to do it properly. If you don't do it properly, you're not gonna think that it's an effective tool and a process, right? So you know, I've written and they are in the book too. I think I've got 13 of them in there. 13 mistakes that
right.
That people make as their journey mapping, and some of the big ones there are that they're not including customers. This is because it's all about understanding the customer. So you've got to include the customer in the process, right? And you've got to bring the customer voice in, and you've got to do this from the customer's perspective. And that leads to the next one, which is a lot of times they're process mapping,
right.
not journey mapping, right? So they're sitting in a room doing something called assumptive mapping, based on what we assume it is, but then actually what they're creating is it's really internally focused, right? And it's more of a process map and than a journey map. And then a lot of them are touch point mapping, not journey mapping. So touch point mapping is more of a way to look at the, you know, the stages in the life cycle and, you know, capture or inventory all of the touch points that happen in during that life cycle stage. But there's a lot of things that happen between those touch points, and so we've got to make sure that we do it right. Another one is not starting with personas.
Right.
Personas are so important because you've got to understand who the customer is and what, you know, what their pain points are, problems to solve, and then map according to that. So those are some of the bigger ones that I write about and that I talk about.
I mean, I think the thing is that because we talked earlier about sort of different types of mapping or, if you like, levels of depth, if you like.
Right.
So there's the big, fully blown sort of like, you know, data and research led, lots of different people, cross-functional, et cetera, et cetera. And that takes a lot of time and a lot of planning and a lot of prep up front. And a big commitment to do it right as well.
Yep.
And a long lead in and so on and so forth. But you're not saying don't do a quick and dirty kind of one. Just make sure that you know what you're doing and why you're doing it, I guess.
Exactly. And even if you do a quick and dirty one and to do it properly, right? Just to make sure that it's got to be from the customer perspective, right? Don't process map even when you're doing the quick and dirty one. It's got to be the steps that the customer is taking. But I think the even if you did something on the simpler level, you've got to just know what you're going to do with it and then go do it, right? A lot of times I've seen clients start with that where it's like, hey, I'm still trying to get executive commitment, or I'm still trying to get the organization to really understand why we're doing this transformation and all the work that we're doing. And so a journey map is a great tool for that. And if you want to do a quick and dirty one, that's awesome, but you've got to go and then do something with it and show that it's a powerful tool that it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of because towards the end of the book, you talk about there's this like, what was it, 6 steps to run, yep. go from maps to outcomes. I mean, and I guess those 6 steps would work whether you went for the full fat or the light version, I guess.
Yeah, you could do a light version of the 6 steps too, right? I mean, it's because a lot of the heavy lifting in there is, you know, bringing the data in and bringing the people in and bringing there's a lot, but you could do a light version of that.
Yeah.
But again, just knowing that you got to do something with it, right? You know, step number six is to implement. So
yes.
You can't talk about going through those steps without, you know, the last step being go do the work, right?
Well, no, exactly. I mean, I've seen lots of very, very pretty kind of journey maps.
Yes, yes.
That get, you know, people have pretty templates and then all this, lots of activity, and they all get right. They all get written up and beautified and everything else, and kind of get displayed on walls.
Yep.
Around kind of like, you know, project rooms and things, and you're like going, they look amazing. And then absolutely squat happens.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So I guess that is the big point. It's like, you know, if you're not going to do anything about it, then don't bother.
Don't even bother. Exactly. Don't even bother. And I think that's one of the mistakes too, is that people make, they have all these, you know, grand ideas, and then they go and they do the journey maps and then do nothing with it. So that's a big, big fail.
So I mean, I really like the book because I like the, I mean, it, I think it's going to be helpful for me because I can do some of this stuff, but not to this level of detail. So I am going to learn a lot from it. But if I may, given that you're also immersed in the service and experience space as I am, and also just to get a broader view than the book, because you are like customers, you're not just your data and you're not just your book, right?
Yep.
So
thank you.
Can I switch gears a little bit? Because I'd like to ask you just some broader questions, if I may.
Oh, yeah.
And get your take on, you know, like the future of service and experience. Because I'm a bit frustrated, if I might kind of say that. Sometimes a little bit. I'm always hopeful.
Yes.
But I'm frustrated. I mean, what do you think the future of customer service and experience looks like?
Yeah. I think we're on the same page. I was going to use the word cynical, but frustrated, maybe that's a nicer word.
Yeah.
I'm a bit frustrated as well, because I feel like, again, I've been in this space for 25 plus years, right? Mm. And I've seen it evolve, but I feel like we are now at a point where we're banging our heads against the wall and we're not making any forward movement, right? And I don't think the future is going to be, at least not the near future, is going to be much different from what it is today, because we still need people to get the basics right, right? We still need them to get the foundation in place. We still need CEOs to get it, you know? And I think, you know, some of that is such a struggle. So yeah, it is, it's frustrating. I'm on the same page with you on that.
And so is that the biggest challenge, you think, kind of like getting senior leaders to get it? Is that still the biggest challenge, you think?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, it's interesting, this business roundtable, you know, these 181 CEOs that just signed this statement a couple of weeks ago the new purpose of business, which is awesome. It's awesome if more CEOs jump on that bandwagon and if these 181 actually believe what they signed.
Yeah, like, but just please just go off and do better shit. Excuse me.
Amen. Amen. Right. I mean, it's like you can't just sign that and then not go and do anything about it. Right. I mean, I hope a year from now we're all sitting here going, hey, let's look at those 181 companies and see what we've heard or read.
Wasn't that amazing? And didn't it produce an incredible outcome? You're like, man, blimey.
Exactly.
Really?
Exactly. So we're still stuck at the top, right? That's the big problem.
So what's the big blocker then with all of that? Because, I mean, it's like, the you know, there's a lot of rhetoric. A lot of like, oh, yeah, our people and our customers are most important to us. And then squat happens.
Yeah.
So what's the big kind of the big blocker? How do we get from rhetoric to actual kind of stuff that matters, meaning and action and things?
That's a really good question. You know, if I had the answer for that, man, I'd share it with you, and we'd go and make it happen, right? Mm. But, you know, they've got to start. I don't know. I'm baffled by it. Right. It's as you can tell, I'm stumbling here because I really don't know why executives don't see that. Here's my latest messaging. It's all about the customer. And you talk about you have competing priorities or whatever, and it's like, well, hang on a second. What's a competing priority? If you don't have customers, you don't have a business. Mm. So that's where my messaging is heading and has been this year, is how do we get CEOs to, and everybody in the organization, to realize it's all about the customer. If we don't have customers, we don't have a business. So, and we know that customers are going to switch. We know customers are frustrated. As a customer, I'd like to switch, but I can't, you know, there's challenges there. So that's a little bit of, I think maybe a little bit of the thing too, right? Is I've been with the same bank for 20 years and they frustrate the crap out of me, but it's hard to switch, you know, it's just like, I need to take a day to go close out. First I got to wait till all my money's out of the account. And then it's a mess. And so they've made it hard for us to leave too, I suppose. So,
well, but I tell you what, like, I've been in with the same bank now for nearly, 30 years.
Oh, wow.
The bank account I opened on the first day I went to university to put my my grant check in, I am still with that bank. Now, they go from being not bad to being, okay.
Yeah.
To being, they annoy the hell out of me.
Right.
And it's really easy to switch in the UK, but I just can't be bothered.
Yes, exactly.
It's like, there's also kind of like, they're also a Scottish bank, and so that narrows down the numbers. And I quite like the fact that they're a Scottish bank, but they kind of like, I let them trade on that, but not that much. Right. But anyway, what I was kind of like going to say is like that. Do you think there's a possibility that CEOs are like senior execs, they get it, but they just don't necessarily understand how to do it?
I think they get it. So in the conversations that I've had with CEOs is I think they get it, but it's a shift in a mindset shift and a behavior shift, right? Mm. And they either don't want to do it, it doesn't fit their what they're hearing from their boards and from their shareholders and from, you know, the like everybody's got to be on board, I guess. I guess we can't put it 100% on the CEO. No. We've got to look at some of these other folks around them that are constantly, you know, in their ears as well. Mm. So yeah, I don't think anybody thinks, oh, I'm in business for myself. I you know, if I don't have customers, who cares? I don't think anybody thinks that, right? But I think there is a mindset shift and a behavior shift that has to happen with the CEO and with the surrounding voices that are constantly in his or her head. So,
you know, I think there is and it's one of those things around, I think there's probably something in the idea that, you know, we talk about, you know, this idea of servant leadership.
Right.
And you know how it's always been more successful in, kind of like military, government, politics, mm-hmm. Yep. Those type of spheres.
Yep.
Than it has been in the sort of corporate world or the business world.
Yeah.
And I suspect there's a philosophical barrier to this, because actually there is, you know, and that's something we sort of need to dig into. It's almost like, is it natural to live a life of service when you're working right. in a commercial business kind of world sort of sense?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's probably worth kind of exploring at some point, but I think it's, It almost feels like, because it's almost we still have businesses that are organized around this hierarchical thing, and you know, almost the further up you go, the more distance you get from the bump and grind of the day to day sort of like stuff. But actually, that what this new kind of like era is pointing out is like actually the bump and grind is where it's at.
Yes, a good point.
You've got to get out of your possibly your fancy suit.
Yep,
and your kind of nice shoes. And, you know, take a big tablespoon worth of kind of humility and go down and sort of like hang out with the folks that are doing the hard work.
Absolutely. I agree. Undercover. Do you guys have Undercover Boss?
I love that show.
I love it too. Yeah, absolutely.
But isn't it absolutely truly remarkable that every single one of these kind of people that come on there, they're like, oh yeah, our business is doing great, da, 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 da. And then they go and find the one, and they find out some crazy stuff that's going on their watch that points directly back to their desk.
Yep, yep.
And then they find also some amazing people who are doing some amazing things that are under their noses.
Exactly.
And they don't know. And you look at it and just go, what planet are you living on?
Yeah, I know. I'm always amazed at, like, really? You've never done that before? You didn't know that? You know, yeah, I agree.
And you're totally like, agree. What sort of leader are you? And I think it's I think you're absolutely right. Something you said right at the very beginning, where you talked about this idea around, it starts with executive commitment, but then also the leaderships and behaviors and things. I think we have to start with that. If people aren't willing to, if you like, get their hands dirty,
yep.
And, you know, and kind of, you know, and really embrace what is actually kind of going on, then I don't think they can't demand other people to do what they're not willing to do themselves.
Exactly. So important. That is so important. Yeah, cool. Absolutely.
I mean, what else? I mean, so do you think, who do you like in terms of, who do you think is doing, apart from the usual suspects? I mean, who do you like that you think, I think these guys and gals have got it absolutely nailed. I think they're walking the walk, they're talking the talk. I think they're doing new, interesting, innovative, but also really simple sort of like stuff, but just they're just doing it. Because the thing that frustrates me as well, another thing that frustrates me, is that it's interesting that the usual suspects aren't changing.
Right.
Or getting
right.
added to, right?
Right.
And that's either kind of like implies two things. Either one, it's really hard to get there, or two, they've just got it, you know, people are just being lazy and not doing the work. So have you come across another character that could earn the accolade of a potential future usual suspect?
There's two of them that pop into my head just as you said that. One of them is Warby Parker.
Okay.
And the other one is Airbnb. I don't know that Airbnb has always been in the usual suspect bucket yet, or has like on the verge of being in there. But Airbnb, I had an opportunity to get a tour. It was actually my second tour, but get some inside insights on how Airbnb does things from a customer, employee culture, all of that perspective. Okay. And they're just doing some amazing things, right? They are really doing some amazing things. And I know they just announced that they were thinking about going public next year. And I know that they're about to launch several new products as well. So yeah, it's all about the customer. It really is. And about their employees and about their hosts. I mean, they have the hosts are their customers as well. And so yeah, it's very clear that they're top of the heap there too.
Nice. And anything else you want to point out from the book before I ask you a couple of kind of questions as we start to sort of like wrap up? I mean, I think it's pretty comprehensive. It's not just about journey mapping. It's about all the stuff. I mean, like, there's no point if you don't know what you're doing, you know. But if you want to do the hard work that's up front, i.e. do the kind of the homework before you do the journey mapping kind of work, then this is definitely going to, as you say, put the customer at the heart of your of your business. But is there anything that you want to mention about the book that we've missed out?
I would just say that there is a nice, we've spent a lot of time talking about CEOs and executives. So there's a nice, open letter to CEOs in the last chapter of the book. And I think I kind of poured my heart out in that one to just really try to get people to think differently about what this is all about. So definitely read through to the end, because you'll want to read that last chapter.
I just pulled it out. Chapter 32, an open letter to CEOs. You've actually signed it Love Annette at the end.
I know, right?
I'm like going, kind of like, I'm going to slap you around and then I'm going to sign off Love Annette.
That's pretty much what it is. I slap you around and then exactly.
Brilliant. But more broadly, if somebody's listening into this or reading the highlights and want to improve their service or experience, particularly maybe their journey mapping, I mean, what would be your best advice? What if you kind of say, like, I need to get started, what should I do? Kind of, what would you say to them?
I would say just get started, right? Do something. You don't even have to do all of the things in the book to get started, right? Mm. There are things you can do to improve the experience that don't cost you any money. There are things that you can do to listen to customers and understand the experience that don't cost you any money.
Right.
So just get started and then use that to build your business case for your executives, right? You can mystery shop your own business. You can do a lot of different, you can listen to customers out on social media. It doesn't cost you a thing, right? Take what you're hearing, bring it in. Propose some improvements, tie that to, you know, some metrics and anticipated outcomes, and let's build the business case and go on to bigger and better things from there. But I would say just get started, do something, right?
Perfect. So one final thing. So I wanted to ask, this is my piece of ongoing social research.
Okay.
Which is around this notion of Punk CX, because I wrote this, produced this new book, came out in June, which you know about. And I'm, at the end of all these interviews, I'm asking for people their opinion on two things. And the first one is, what one or two words that do you think would describe a punk approach to CX?
All right. Well, first of all, I have your book sitting right here on my desk. It's awesome. If you, for those who are listening, if you don't have it, get it. It's an amazing book. It really kind of kicks you in the ass, you know?
Yep, it's supposed to do that.
Intentionally kicks you in the ass. And yeah, yeah, this is so if you need a good bit of motivational reading for the weekend, there you go. It's right there. So I highly recommend it.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Absolutely. My one or two words, I would say, no fear. No fear, because I think these are the brands that take the road less traveled, right? Mm. I think they don't care what other people think or what other people are doing. We're going to do it our way, and we're going to make it right for the customer. We're going to do what's right. We're going to do the right thing. And yeah, no fear.
Perfect. That's cool. And it's also kind of old school surf brand as well.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yep. There you go. And then finally, the second one is like, what company or brand do you think epitomizes a punk CX ethos?
I think this one falls right in line with my no fear, Zappos.
Right.
I love Zappos. I think they're, you know, Tony Hsieh, when he, you know, when he first started out, like, this is exactly his thing. He took the road less traveled, right? He did what he wanted to do and create this very service-oriented, service-focused, people-centric culture. I think that's an amazing brand. So Zappos is my pick for that.
Nice. So, Annette, thank you for that. And I just want to say, you know, finally, absolutely, you know, congratulations in big capital letters on publishing the book. I think it's a great achievement. If you did it in 9 months, then by all accounts, I don't think that's too long. I've heard people have been writing books for like 3 years or so, and I'm thinking,
yes.
Blimey. So well done to you. I mean, where can people find it? Is it all over the usual places of finding books, i.e. Amazon?
Yes, i.e. Amazon. Yes, Amazon, not just Amazon.com, but all the Amazon offerings around the world. I think they've got it on like 12 or 15 different global pages. So
awesome.
Yeah, so Amazon is where you can find the book. It's right now it's available in paperback, coming in the Kindle version soon, as soon as I have a few hours to sit down and make that happen. So
perfect. And best place to kind of find out more about yourself, cx-journey.com?
cx-journey.com, that works. Yeah, that'll you can
do.
Contact me through there and you can learn all about what I do. Absolutely.
Annette, it's always a pleasure talking to you.
Likewise.
I wanted just to say, yeah, last of all, thank you and congratulations again. And I'll make sure this all gets linked up before it goes out, which should be in the next kind of week or so. But yeah, awesome. Just thank you. That's been great.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. Thank you for your support. It means a lot to me.
Well, that's it for another interview. I really hope you enjoyed it. Now, every time I complete one of these interviews, I learn something new. And I try and incorporate that new learning into my writing, my speaking, my workshops, and the consulting that I do for my clients. If you're interested, you can find out more about how I work with clients over at adrianswimsko.com. But one final thing before I go, please consider heading over to iTunes or whichever podcast platform you choose to use and do leave a review. Every little helps, as they say. Anyway, that's all for now. Thank you for listening and do listen in again. All the very best.